League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Totally at the World Cup.
We are finished. Yes? Let's be done.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable this.
France are world champions. World Cup trophy ends up across the channel faster than a viewer hearing Kuhn's doing commentary. For Croatia, worse afternoon for a team in Chequers since May's Brexit white paper.
Now he cannot stop.
We salute both finalists and a remarkable end to what's been a remarkable tournament. Plus, we have a word for FIFA's big game of contractual obligation, Saturday's third-fourth playoff, in which Belgium beat England 2-0. All that and more coming up in our final, Totally at the World Cup. That's right, we're having a World Cup final party here at Totally. We've got Sasha Gurionov here.
Bonjour.
James Horncastle's
here. Hello.
Tom Williams, you're here.
Hello.
And so is Matt Davis.
Howdy.
And now to announce the biggest name of all, you listener. You, the most important person. As we look back on this, we'll just turn that down if you could, Tom. Thanks. Yeah, as we look back on this extraordinary finale to the tournament, France, you probably saw, what was the final score, Tom? 4-2 winners and becoming world champions for only the second time in their history. Tom, worthy winners for you?
Yes, I think France have been the best team overall at the tournament, and they weren't great in the final. Croatia were very unfortunate to fall behind twice. But then once France kicked on, I think they looked pretty convincing by the end.
James, I noticed from Twitter, you've already placed your bet for France to be knocked out of the group stages at Qatar 2022.
I could not resist, Jimbo.
Yeah. All right. But this is a very exciting team, surely. And it's so young.
Oh, absolutely. Was it the second youngest team at the competition? So many top performers, I think, over the course of the tournament. It's actually quite difficult to pick. Who was France's best player, I would say. Controversial, I don't think it's that controversial. I would go not with Mbappe, not with Paul Pogba, I'd probably say Rafa Varane.
All right, yeah. Nice.
And would have a very good shot, maybe not winning the Ballon d'Or, but certainly been in the top 10 as maybe the best defender, because not only a World Cup winner, Jimbo, but Champions League winner with his club as well.
Heck quite of a season double. He's had. Yeah. And heck of a tournament it's been, Sasha. A wonderful competition, whether it was Russia it took place in or FIFA land, it's just been fabulous. And the final was actually almost like a kind of a distillation. It was the whole tournament in microcosm.
Apart from France, I suppose, because I think France were more miserly throughout the tournament, but perhaps you could argue some sort of replay of the Argentina game. But I think we also saw another brave performance by Croatia. I mean, they knocked Kante out of the game, and arguably perhaps the best move that the shop made all night was bringing on Zonzi when Kante was visibly rattled, and that sort of steadied up the French team, and they hit them twice. Unfortunately, I think Subasic was clearly unfit today for Croatia. Another unfortunate, of course, is the fact they didn't really have a decent backup goalkeeper. So I think Croatia, you know, three extra times, those wins on penalties, great effort tonight. And I thought just last 20, 25 minutes, the legs just went.
they could have brought on Nikola Kalinic.
Well, it's an interesting point you make. Many listeners writing in saying, "Yeah, what could have been had they had it? I'm not sure how much difference it would have made, but a crazy match, as I say, reflected the tournament at times magnificent, at times frustrating, at times farcical. Should we have a little look back on how it played out? Because whilst France did emerge heavy winners for a long time, it looked very much in the balance. It took an own goal off Mario Mandzukic's head to put France in the lead, prompting scenes like these at Paris. A little bit against the run of play, Tom.
Completely against the run of play. I thought France started really poorly. Sasha's already mentioned how badly N'Golo Kanté did, and I thought he was symbolic, really, of their struggles in the first sort of 15-20 minutes and beyond. Croatia really aggressive, really purposeful, getting the ball to Perisic and Rebic in the wide areas, causing France problems. And then Antoine Griezmann wins a slightly soft free kick that he takes himself. Mandzukic gets the touch on it that takes it in for a goal. And then, to their credit, Croatia came back and I think they equalised, what, about 10 minutes later. Lovely hit from Perisic. But then Perisic gets on the end of this very debatable penalty decision, and that enables France to get in the lead again.
Absolutely. The VAR decision. The VAR had been so quiet through the knockout stages, Matt. What did you make of this?
The referee is the person who gets the stick rather than VAR per se, I think. Nesta Pitana, the extraordinary scene where he'd finished watching the replay on the screen, it appeared, and then he just ran back just for one final little check. It's interpretation, isn't it? It certainly didn't look like a deliberate handball to me, but you just got the impression, because we haven't seen very much VAR in the knockout stages, or certainly from the quarterfinal onwards, that once he'd gone to the screen, he was always going to give the penalty in France's favour. And yeah, just not the correct decision, I don't think, and a strange, a disappointing for FIFA. I wonder what FIFA will make of that, because I think they would have been ready to say, well, we tried VAR in the World Cup and it was a success.
I think they're committed to it anyway. I don't think they'll go back.
Well, yeah, but it would be better for them if that hadn't happened in today's final. So there wasn't an obvious example of it maybe being misinterpreted or misused.
Because the consensus, certainly with us, and I think broadly, was that it was the wrong decision. Personally, I don't care if it was wrong or right. I just don't want to see that happen in the World Cup final.
I think what we have here now is a narrative on the Croatian side of being hard done by again, because I get the impression after the 98 semi-final, they thought they were never really meant to win. But one thing that Croatia does really well in football is get revenge. Battle of Old Trafford in 96 against Germany, they lose 2-1, really carry it with them to 98 and beat Germany. 2012, slightly unluckily, they get knocked out by Spain. They take it to 2016. They beat them in the final group stage match 2-1 with having changed half the team against the first team, Spain. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the next tournament or two, Croatia come up against France and they batter them.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
OK, after that, it was Croatia who started getting battered, and a lot of question marks over whether Subasic, James Galbraith asking, could he have been any less obviously fit in the biggest game of his country's history? Such a shame. France began to just shoot onside at him.
And to some extent, there was some regret that England did not do that in the semi-final, because it was really clear from that Trippier free kick that he wasn't willing to push off, I think, on one leg. And yeah, they were just absolutely merciless in taking advantage.
It's ironic because they're French.
Exactly. Pogba Mbappe combination for what Pogba's goal was just brilliant.
On the subject of Paul Pogba, a canary mark among many people saying Pogba was amazing the whole tournament. And he makes, again, the same connection a lot of people are doing with Jose Mourinho and the fact that Pogba hasn't performed that way for Man United. And so does Mourinho have to take a look at the way he's handling him?
Well, Tom and I were laughing whilst we were watching this because, you know, all year there's been this debate that Pogba just wants to play on the left of a midfield three. He's played on the right of a midfield two in this tournament and looked very good. And I think a lot of people were saying that's because he had Kante beside him, even though, as Sasha said, that France improved when Kante went off. I think it was a pretty complete tournament from Pogba. You know, the criticism he gets in this country is lack of discipline without the ball. And instead, when he needed to be there for France defensively, he was there. I thought he was magnificent again in the game against Argentina as well. Not only releasing Mbappe on the counter-attack, but running with the ball himself. So, yeah, I think he's had a great tournament. Let's see if he can do the same for United next season.
Meantime, the nascent supernova of the footballing firmament, if you will, Kylian Mbappe, Tom, getting the fourth goal for France. I know you were really excited about Hernandez's run building
yes.
up to this.
Yeah, lovely run from Hernandez. He picks the ball up just inside the Croatia half and he's got a defender right behind him and does really well to turn, drives down the flank and then squares it to Mbappe. And I didn't think Mbappe had a fantastic game today. I thought the first half in particular, he looked quite nervous. Mm. The first sort of 5-10 minutes, he couldn't even seem to control the ball. But then as France got on top, he grew into it more and more, particularly with his pace giving them an outlet. Obviously, it was his run down the right that that got them forward for the Pogba goal. And then, yeah, he collects the pass from Hernandez and a bit of disguise on the shot. Looks like he's opening himself up to curl it to the goalkeeper's left, puts it the other way. But as you've said, Subasic didn't cover himself in glory in his attempt to save it. And yeah, I mean, no dispute about Mbappe winning the silver ball. That Argentina game was a real coming-of-age moment and probably the most exciting individual performance at the tournament.
Mbappe receiving that award in the rain at the Luzhniki as it began to absolutely team down. And remarkable scenes as everybody stood there drenched apart from Vladimir Putin.
The poor president of Croatia, soaked to the bone, was umbrella-less for the majority of the ceremony. Gianni Infantino rocking the drowned rat look as well. But yeah, Vladimir stayed relatively dry.
Right. Perhaps nobody wanted to go near Russians with umbrellas. I don't know. That might have been the issue. But it was a strange ceremony. When it eventually happened.
Yeah, it took an eternity to get going. It was very odd, as you say. And then when we finally get the money shot that we've been waiting for all tournament of Hugo Lloris lifting the trophy, some chaps are in the way of the camera and we don't really get to see it at all. So, you know, perhaps we restart the World Cup and hope we get a better trophy lift.
Yeah, maybe so.
To be fair to the Russians, this was probably the most shambolic part of the whole tournament, which I think as a whole ran really, really well.
That's fair, Sasha. Sorry. also,
glad you're here for the balance.
Also, giving the golden ball to Modric was a really ace move.
I think, he's had given everything that's happened to him before the tournament, given that he's potentially getting done for perjury, although Croatian president seems to be close to Mamic as well as she was to Modric. But to be able to sort of carry that pressure on you into this tournament and to play so remarkably well. You have to bear in mind, though, he wasn't on his own in that midfield. I think with sort of Brozovic, Rakitic and Modric there in the middle, I think they had pretty good balance. But also Rebic and Perisic, I thought, did very, very well on the wings. And what I really did, and the manager as well for me, because I think against England, there was a slight tweak after half-time where basically Perisic and Rebic switched flanks. Rebic went about 10 yards forward behind Trippier next to Walker, roughed up Walker a little bit, destabilised that England back line, and then Perisic switched flanks again and he scores the goal. And today in the match at 1-0, I suddenly saw Rebic helping out Strinic at left back and I thought, they switched flanks again. And what do you know, the long ball goes forward and Perisic actually comes from the wing where he isn't really supposed to be, wins the free kick and then eventually leads to the equaliser. So I think overall the balance in that midfield was absolutely impressive.
There was one more goal, of course, for the Croatians, which briefly suggested they might come back into it. Mandzukic. That was a curious thing. That was Lloris attempting to dribble past him.
Yeah, Lloris otherwise had a fantastic tournament. Didn't get the Golden Glove Award in the end, which went to Thibaut Courtois. This was, I suppose, a little bit reminiscent of Karius in the Champions League final, though not with the same cost. And again, a reminder that Lloris does have this in him, as we saw in qualifying when they lost to Sweden in Solna because of a mistake that he made. But I think ultimately that will be forgotten. I think the main goalkeeping clangor, which will be remembered from this tournament, will remain Willy Caballero setting up Ante Rebic so beautifully.
It's a pity for Lloris, though, because he, as you said, I mean, he got a lot of stick in qualifying, and, you know, we know that he's not been in great form for Spurs, or not been in top form for Spurs over the past couple of seasons. And he'd been brilliant for France. I thought he was in with a shout for the Golden Glove Award, and then, unfortunately, I mean, in the end, it didn't matter, but it's a shame for him to end the tournament on that note, having played so well up to that moment.
Golden Gloves instead went to Thibaut Courtois, which is fair, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice. Good.
Mario Mandzukic, by the way, first player to score an own goal in the World Cup final, but the fifth player to score in both the World Cup and European Cup / Champions League finals.
Mm. How many own goals were there in the tournament 12? As a whole?
12.
Were there 12? That feels huge.
Yeah, he got the golden boot. Harry Kane's appealing.
Right. On his daughter's life. Yeah. So Harry Kane picked up the golden boot for 3 penalties, 1 off his heel.
A couple 2 of corners.
Yeah. 2 tap-ins.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it does feel a little... I mean, well done to him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't feel entirely kind of Oleg Salenko, 1994. But
as somebody pointed out, it's pretty impressive, those 6 goals, given that he didn't play in the playoff.
Yeah.
The playoffs. we'll come on to England very, very shortly, because, of course, they were involved in a big game on Saturday against Belgium. But some final thoughts then on France on Sunday's final. Charles Brockbank asks, question for the pod, has anyone ever won the World Cup before without their centre-forward scoring at all? It's true, Giroud without any goals, without any shots in this game.
Well, France did it, didn't they, in 1998 with Givash.
Ah. Yeah.
I thought that was a your answer. Question.
Well, maybe it was.
These are, again, some of the historical parallels that the keeper were pointing out as to why France were going to win the World Cup.
Because, what were the other ones?
Well, because in 98, Israel won Eurovision like they did this year as well. There was a German winner of the British Grand Prix, Schumacher then, Vettel, this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you were less impressed by this, Real Madrid winning the Champions League, although when they won it then, it was the first time they'd won it in donkey's years. So there you go. It was obviously written in the stars.
Right. Roger Davis asking the question you posited before, how much could Croatia have done with Nikola Kalinic in this final? He was sent home, of course, I think after the first game, wasn't it?
He refused to come on as a sub, using an excuse he used before, and basically the Croatian staff weren't impressed. Today, I mean, they tried to mix it up by bringing in Kramaric, but I don't really think Kramaric gave him anything. So maybe Kalinic was at home celebrating that they failed.
On the basis of his form for his club this season, I would say he wouldn't have been a big miss.
Mm.
The final being as it was, great, chaotic, terrific, just rubber stamp that this has been a fantastic World Cup.
It's been an entertaining, chaotic.
Yeah, I
think it
seemed
does.
Like we needed a good final to maybe put it into that 82-70 bracket.
Steady and on.
Is it nearly there now?
I don't think so.
Why not, Tom?
It was hugely enjoyable World Cup, and I had a great time watching it. I think to be a truly great World Cup, you need great teams with great players at the top of their game. And I don't think we had that. I think the only team out of all the favourites who turned up were France. And even though they won it, they weren't particularly exciting to watch. We had some great shocks. We had some great storylines, some interesting, enjoyable matches. But I think quality-wise and drama-wise, I don't think...
I think drama-wise, we did. I think I get your point about quality, but I think drama in terms of host nation going much further. I think Germany going out in this farcical fashion against Korea.
Spain sacking their manager.
Yeah, just beforehand. I think there's been enough drama.
Also, while I completely take your point, I was thinking much the same thing about France being the only big team that turned up. You have to define the big teams by what they actually do. So, you know, maybe the big teams in this case, you know, the best teams actually did turn up. Does that make sense?
You know, I think it does, yeah. I mean, you know, Belgium and Croatia, I think in both cases we saw two sort of golden generations, to use a very overused term, sort of finally hit their level for the first time, which was exciting. Obviously, England had a very exciting, unexpected tournament. I mean, it was a great World Cup. It was huge fun. There were some great matches, some amazing storylines.
Amazing goals as well.
Some amazing goals. Yeah, I just don't think that quality-wise you can put it alongside the historic great World Cups.
I mean, the other argument to make is how lopsided one side of the draw was. You know, and I think France deserved to win the tournament, not only because of how they performed in the final tonight, but because they've done it a harder way than, let's say, someone else on the other side.
Mm.
You know, to be there with, you know, Brazil, Argentina, Belgium, all of that lot come through. You know, that adds to their credentials as you know, champions. Yeah.
And you might say that Saturday's third, fourth playoff underlined the relative strengths of the two halves with Belgium beating England 2-0 and looking, it's probably fair to say, a cut above. Well, we'll ask that question after this.
Listeners, it's been a long old World Cup, and as a special thank you for being with us throughout the last month of Totally Football Shows, we've teamed up with our friends at Beer 52 again to offer you a free case of craft beer. Beer 52 is the world's most popular monthly craft beer discovery club. They search out incredible and exclusive small batch craft beers from the world's greatest breweries. Just head to beer52.com/football and you can try your first case for free. All you have to pay is the £2.95 postage. So that's 8 incredible craft beers plus Beer 52's magazine Ferment and some bar snacks delivered to your door with next day shipping. There's no minimum commitment with Beer 52. If you decide after this free case that Beer 52's not for you, you can pause or cancel your membership at any time. So, football may not have come home, but the beers will be with Beer 52. Head to beer52.com/football to find out more.
So, Saturday afternoon saw Belgium meet England for the third, fourth playoff, which is a little bit like watching the teams in detention while the, you know, the other boys go off and enjoy an end-of-season trip or something, Matt. Here's a fun fact for you. What do England, Panama and Saudi Arabia have in common?
They're the only teams to have lost three games at the tournament.
Tom, you're good. So this was actually a really enjoyable game.
Yes, yeah, very enjoyable. And as you said, I think a quite clear difference in level between the two teams. I mean, obviously, Belgium went ahead in the fourth minute and England struggled to make a game of it thereafter. But then it took Belgium until quite late in the game to score the second goal through Hazard. So there was a degree of suspense. The highlight of the game for me was that fantastic Belgian passing move that culminated in Dries Mertens crossing for Thomas Meunier to hit a volley that Jordan Pickford saved. And at the time, I thought, oh, that would have been a great goal if it had gone in. I got a text off my dad and he said, if that had gone in, it would have been one of the greatest goals ever scored. And I thought, OK, steady on, Dad. But I watched it again. And I think he's right. It was an absolutely sensational bit of football.
This is England with pressure down at the other end, and Belgium win the ball back, but it's really far down the pitch. And they just do. And this is after a period of English pressure of about, what, sort of 10 minutes, it feels almost as though England has been passing the ball around, creating half chances. And Belgium just basically go, that's not a knife, this is a knife, and just show us how it should be done. Just a couple of back heels, 1-2, and you're down the field. And then, as you say, Meunier with what would have been, I mean, almost better than certainly the Nachos or Pavards, or it would have been an incredible goal.
Mm. And, I mean, fantastic break down the pitch, as you say, a couple of back heels. I think there was one from Hazard, one from De Bruyne maybe. And then quite a superfluous cross by Mertens. It wasn't the obvious pass to play. It was like he wanted to do something a bit showy. And Meunier meets it beautifully. And fair play to Pickford. He saves it.
Absolutely brilliant save from Jordan Pickford. As you say, it was all wrapped up about 10 minutes from time, I think, by Eden Hazard. One or two question marks over Phil Jones's performance there, as indeed there were over Danny Rose on the opening goal. But, I mean, it's probably wrong to draw too many conclusions from a game like this when patently, although the teams want to finish on a high note,
from
Sasha,
an England perspective, kind of a not necessarily a bad thing to have lost that game, because the as he has been all tournament, Gareth Southgate very realistic after the match, almost saying, listen, this is a false position for England to be in. We're not one of the four best teams in the world. You know, had they beaten the golden generation of Belgium in that game, maybe the hype would have got even more so than it has been. But it is a kind of, look, we've had a great tournament. We did really well to get to the semi-finals, but perhaps this is the exception rather than the rule. It's something we can work towards, but we are not as good as Belgium and as France and as Croatia.
But what they are is really fun to watch. Now, the Southgate, I think, was making a suggestion, certainly a lot of commentators were, that Belgium are effectively 6 years ahead of England in terms of bringing forward a great generation. But equally, England have made great strides within this tournament. What do you think has been the biggest improvement, if you've seen one, Sasha, in this England side?
I think if you look at the last 2 years, you can see that Southgate is starting from basics. Have a shape, do well on set pieces, and obviously there is the next thing now is, you know, trying to score goals from open play. Do you look more constructively going forward? Because I know there's been a lot of excitement in England about the way England played. Certainly hasn't been that much excitement in Russia, because they see I think, an incomplete team, which is not that fun to watch. Because, I mean, if you look the way England got through, I mean, they battered a couple of poor teams. And I know this has been said before, you know, you can only beat what's in front of you. But the general play going forward hasn't really excited the Russians that much. I also find it quite odd the way in England the third place match means absolutely nothing. Maybe because in England you get the winner's medal, you get the runners-up medal. There isn't really a concept of a bronze medal. Whereas, for example, on the continent, I mean, in Russian or Soviet football, you always get the three sets of medals. Again, if you look at 98 for Croatia, that third place win was actually really, really important. So, I mean, for me, it was a bit of a shame that, you know, it was a glorified friendly, the match for the third place, because England changed half the team, they changed the shape a little bit. I think arguably Belgium took it more seriously, but it wasn't a real contest.
Tom, have you got a stat about third, fourth playoffs?
The teams who finished third at the World Cup and then failed to qualify for the following European Championship.
Right.
Poland in 1982, France in 1986, Italy in 1990, Sweden in 1994, Croatia in 1998.
So it's every
Turkey
World
Turkey in
Cup.
2002, yeah. And the Netherlands in 2014.
So we skipped a couple, but that's amazing. Having said that, I mean, England finished fourth in the 1990 World Cup, had a terrible 92 and then completely missed out on 94. So who can say? But
You don't really get that feeling with this England team now. It feels like this England team is building towards something, and it's just basically an incomplete side, so there will be an improvement.
Do you feel that Belgium are going to be back? A lot of people are saying, well, this is their one big shot. But they've got an exciting team.
Is De Bruyne about to retire? Is Lukaku about to retire?
No.
Is Hazard about to retire? No, they're not. I think this team will be back.
Yeah, certainly for the Euros.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and for the Nations League comes September. Yeah, that's right. That's the next big international action. I'm actually perversely looking forward to it. I was looking at the fixtures today because it begins on 6th of September. Germany-France, which will be the meeting of the last two world champions. Wales, that same day, taking on Republic of Ireland. England will be up against Spain on the 8th of September. That's interesting, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, and renewed enthusiasm for international football in this country now. So.
Hurrah!
Hooray.
Club football wasn't getting in the way.
Oh, dear. But that's the World Cup done. I mean, 3.5 years without seeing Gianni Infantino sat between two dodgy despots.
Is it three and a half years?
It's three and... Oh, is it four and a half? 4.5 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Can you imagine how much expectations would have built up by then for England? It's going to be insane. All right. Any final thoughts before we tidy up after ourselves, like the Japanese?
We're going to talk about legacy?
Yeah, go on. Talk about legacy.
So legacy for Russia, threefold. Football.
Right.
So we'll see how much this World Cup changes the image of football in Russia. Do Russians get more interested? Do those people who went to the World Cup, do they go to watch the Russian Premier League matches? Maybe they do for half a year and then they lose the will to live. Maybe. In terms of the white elephants, in terms of stadiums, there's certainly questions already around some of those grounds.
Hopefully not Ekaterinburg.
In Ekaterinburg, there's a question of when they're going to take down the temporary stands. But there is questions around Rostov, because, for example, FC Rostov are going to have to pay apparently 12 million ruble rent per match, which is £150,000, as opposed to the 400,000 rubles, which is 5K they paid before. And, you know, for their budget, that's quite steep. There is things around Kaliningrad. Perhaps Baltica might not want to use the new stadium because it's too expensive. And this takes me back to South Africa. I was in Cape Town a few months after the World Cup. And I think what they tried to do there was Ajax Cape Town and Santos were going to put on double headers at the Greenpoint Stadium. And if I recall correctly, they gave up after about three sets of matches because it was too expensive. They weren't getting enough fans. The rent was too high. So there is questions about these stadiums being used in the provinces, certainly not questions around the St. Petersburg, which is going to be used at the Euros, or the Spartak Stadium, or Luzhniki. But the viability of football, below the top clubs, that problem hasn't gone away. I mean, if you look at the state of the Russian second division, vast majority of clubs are state-owned, and the promotion relegation last season was a farce. The bottom five teams were supposed to go down. They didn't, because teams fell apart, teams moved, and it was a complete mess.
Sasha, is there not a lot of money in Russian football? You'd think there would be, given the number of rich Russian owners in everybody else's football.
Well, exactly. I mean, there is a handful of rich Russian owners in Russian football. Perhaps, you know, the best of those is the guy who owns FC Krasnodar Galitsky, because for him it's properly his own club. But everything else is on state is on regional budgets. And, you know, you need a few million euros a year to run a team in the second division. And, you know, this is coming out of your budget. No one's really interested. And it's really not a very good environment. And now these clubs get these big, shiny new grounds, but they somehow have to fill them, somehow have to pay for them. And I'm not sure it's actually, you know, it's I'm not sure the success story is quite there. Certainly Russians are quite sceptical at the moment.
In terms of infrastructure, maybe not, but in terms of the image of Russia and Russians in the world. It's been an unmitigated success.
It has, but I think, unfortunately, in the run-up to the World Cup, the discussion was lobotomized to a very low level, basically, because of all these stories about hooligans and things that were blatantly not going to happen because they were not going to be allowed to happen.
Is it possible that what happened at the Euros with clashes between Russian, this kind of almost squadron of Russian fans that arrived quite organised, was that almost a preemptive strike to say, listen, this is what we can do, so don't even think about coming over and coming and causing any trouble?
No, I don't think so. Because if you look, roll back 2 years, what sort of image for Russian football was that? Worst team, worst fans. Absolute disaster. I mean, I don't think that's the way to send a message to potential troublemakers. I mean, of course, facetious have
probably
comments.
Worked, though.
Comments were made at the time by some Russian politicians, but I do find that line a little bit
stupid.
Fanciful,
you can call it stupid. Yeah,
I don't agree with it at all. And what I think it did highlight to the Russian authorities was the fact that perhaps when they went a little bit, the guard was a little bit down. They thought they had the job done. The hooligans were reined in, and they weren't.
Right.
So, of course, they came out down on them like a ton of bricks afterwards. But what I found, something we talked about before on the pod, that, you know, a lot of criticism really should be coming at Putin and maybe the Russian people kind of left out of it. But I think a lot of the narrative before the World Cup was about racism, xenophobia, homophobia. And I felt that that kind of threw quite a big shadow on actually the Russians themselves.
Mm.
So therefore, a lot of people didn't really fancy it because, I mean, they're horrible. Why should we go out there? Besides the hooligans, I think all these Russians in all their rubbish little cities, they're not really friendly to the foreigners. And I think when people actually turn up there and they see, well, these people are delighted to see us here, then the narrative goes the other way. And therefore, you know, the press gets criticized. For me, the main reason people didn't go is, of course, personal safety.
Hmm.
I don't think your average England fan, no disrespect, really dives into the whole political situation somewhere like Russia, a country which I found I found quite a lack of curiosity about it since they got the World Cup. There was, of course, a lot of focus on the process of how the Russians got the World Cup, and there was then focus on hooligans. But the nitty-gritty, maybe the editors didn't really think it was worth their attention. Maybe it was much easier to go down the line of, oh, they're all horrible anyway. Back to my original point, I felt then the discussion reached a really low level. So then to dispel all these myths was quite easy. And now the Russians can turn around saying, well, everything you say about us is rubbish, which of course is rubbish in itself.
Mm.
So it's a massive win for Russians and say for Putin now. But I think it was almost made too easy for them to take nothing away from the World Cup. And final point I'd like to make as well, infrastructure itself away from the football.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these cities got new roads, new airports. I mean, even St. Petersburg had absolute shambles of an airport until a few years ago. So they've got all this infrastructure which people have noticed. Of course, it hasn't been done that well. I mean, somewhere like Samara, they've sort of painted a few facades in certain parts and put some fences, whereas the rest of it's just falling down. But a lot of the city centres, they were certainly spruced up. And a friend of mine from Volgograd sort of left me a message talking very excitedly about what World Cup did for Volgograd. And one of the things that he mentioned is like people saw how they could live. And maybe that makes them rethink, like, you know, not the whole existence, but maybe they can expect more. They will expect more now. And that's in terms of amenities, in terms of how the city could look, in terms of being proud of the cities. Because a lot of Russians in all these provincial towns, they are quite downbeat. Life's quite tough and the city looks a bit rubbish. Oh, how are these visitors going to find us? Going to find this whole thing? Oh, these visitors really love it. They think it's so positive and great. Well, maybe we should, you know, our own view should change. And I think the most fundamentally important part of this has been that the foreign visitors saw the Russians and the Russians saw the foreign visitors. Because, yeah, you know, I think quite often on Russian television, you don't get the most balanced picture. Certainly in the press over here, I don't think you were getting the most balanced picture either. And I think this is a kind of restore slightly your faith in humanity when people actually meet and interact on you know, a personal level.
Mm.
They actually find, you know, they got probably more common than the politicians do.
The Russians love their children too, Sasha.
If you can change, then we can change.
Well, listeners, we don't want to go, but that kind of brings us towards the end of our World Cup coverage, Tom. We've got a couple of questions here. We could do those. This one's from Ross. He says, how much fun have you had, Tom?
How much fun have I personally had watching the World Cup?
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a strong 9. It's been a really fun tournament. And I have really enjoyed watching basically all of it. And I'm really sad at the thought that it's now over, because it does just occupy your thinking. You know, it determines how you plan your days for the best part of 4 weeks, and then it's suddenly over.
Well, now we'll get a little bit of a break, and then all the club football will be back.
Oh, no, I can't even think about club football. Well, it feels like a betrayal to the World Cup.
I bet Matt's already thinking about club football, because, of course, Chelsea are back. And big, big things happening there. Three-fifths Stat Vita, which is not a reference I understand, asks, couldn't we have a word on Sarri and Jorginho as well? Sarri and Jorginho have just come into... To Chelsea from Napoli, James. And
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Sarri was not somebody who I was particularly up on the history of until I read James's piece in The Independent. And yeah, it sounds like we're in for some fun times next season.
What was the thing that surprised you most about that piece?
Just the fact that he came so late to the game, basically, was something that I wasn't particularly aware of, not being a massive follower of Italian football. But heavy smoker, came late to the game. A few questionable remarks in his past, which he was asked about during his job interview, but he obviously provided a good enough response for it not to be deemed a major issue. But yeah, it's another crazy day in the life of Chelsea Football Club. It's certainly a fun club.
There was a lot of enthusiasm around these arrivals and certainly, potentially others.
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Okay, Jorginho, you're a massive fan, James. What's he going to bring to Chelsea?
What brains, I think. Someone who can basically come in and show everyone, his new teammates, how to play Sarri's brand of football. I think that's really important, because there's not long to go until the start of the season. Remember, Chelsea are in the Community Shield. And Sarri's got a very sophisticated system, which is completely different from the one that Antonio Conte has implemented there for the last 2 years. Different in that it's proactive rather than reactive. Different system as well. We're going away from that that three-man defence. That kind of changed the game in the Premier League. Had a big influence on how England played at this World Cup, I would wager as well. I think we'll see them play 4-3-3 or 4-3-1-2. And change to a team that looks to dominate the opposition with the ball, and look to play as much as in the opposition's half as possible. And yeah, Jorginho is someone who can dictate the tempo, give a passing game to this Chelsea side. I think patience is needed, because, as I said, time is of the essence now, and this process will take a while to really set in.
Took a while in Naples, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I mean, Diego Maradona famously came out after his, I think, first couple of games and said, I like Sarri, but Napoli are going to go nowhere with him. They'll probably finish in mid-table, and you know, by Christmas they were winter champions. I think this is very exciting, and again, I think for the Premier League as a whole, which has benefited so much from the likes of Conte, Guardiola, Klopp, Pochettino, all these people come in, you know, they're going to be enriched again. Maybe some of those English players, Loftus-Cheek coming back, something like that. So, exciting.
All right, and of course, if you want to know more about the whole Sarri mentality and Jorginho, you should probably have a listen to the fabulous interview that James did with Nate Shalabar, who came by totally and spent a very informative hour just kind of revealing what it was like playing with them down in Naples. And that's available, you know, on the Golazzo stream. Great. Oh, is Eden Hazard going? He is, isn't he, Matt?
Extraordinary comments from him after the third, fourth place playoff. To come out with it at that time seemed sort of disrespectful to his Belgium teammates, I thought. Never mind his Chelsea ones. But he likes toying with the press a bit, does Edin. But I think he was pretty unequivocal, actually, the quotes that he said. He's got 2 years left on his contract, so Chelsea, if they are going to sell him, they need to do it this summer rather than let him.
Sounds like he's heading off. Yeah.
Unless Dries Mertens told him how great it is to work under Maurizio Sarri. You know?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
It does feel like this World Cup might mark a bit of a departure point in terms of the kind of hierarchy of the great footballers, in that Messi didn't have a great tournament, Ronaldo went home earlier than he would have wanted to, and we had all these new stars, Mbappe most obviously, Hazard had a great tournament, Ronaldo's now the Iranian guy who tried to do the acrobatic throwing. So clearly someone needs to replace Ronaldo. Yeah. Neymar's stock has fallen at PSG at the same time that Mbappe's has risen. So I think we're looking at a more interesting Ballon d'Or voting process. Harry Maguire probably up there or thereabouts.
Well, that's one of the many interesting questions that we'll be following when the football comes back, not too long from now, in 3 or 4 weeks' time. It's been a great month. One thing, actually, before we leave you, listener, is we should say big credit to Dmitry Komarov, Sasha. Dmitry Komarov, who is a Ukrainian chess grandmaster, but more importantly, is the man who said this.
Yes, rook d1, rook d8, Hikaru Nakamura, rook d8, rook g5, check. Rook g4, unbelievable this. Maybe draw coming. Hikaru Nakamura missed his opening
idea. That's right. It was Dmitry all along. Many people have actually spotted this.
Unbelievable.
Many people spotted this on Twitter, but for those of you who were still wondering, that's where that came from. Good. No odds from Paddy Power today, of course, and which means that we come here to the end of... what's been the first year of the Totally Football Show? Many thanks to everybody who's been involved throughout the last however many months, and to all our sponsors who've, of course, helped keep the podcast free, to The Observer, The New York Times, Football 365 and Gimlet for all your kind reviews, and Jazz FM for giving us this this home. Most of all, though, thank you, listener, for being here with us. We will return start of August, before the new Premier League season gets underway, just to preview things, work out who's gone where, all that kind of thing. And there will be a couple of things dropping in your podcast feed over the summer in the meantime. But, of course, you can keep up to date with all our news and info at The Totally Show, where you can also find out the details of our upcoming live shows, Tom, in Manchester and London. That, though, is it. For this final edition of Totally at the World Cup, many thanks for being with us, Matt.
And thank you, James.
And Tom.
Thank you, James.
And James.
Pleasure.
And Sasha.
Thank you, James.
Listeners, we'll be back soon enough. Have yourselves a great time in the meanwhile. For now, from all of us here, it's...
До свидания.
It's like this mad riddle that no one knows what it is, what?
England win! England win! Will be in the World Cup semi-final for the first time since 1990.
Now he cannot stop.
The feeling grows stronger that football is coming home.
Coming home.
How does it feel to be French right now, mon ami?
Oh, guys, it feels great to be French.
No! Tokyo, tack it, if you will. Yeah, I'll get my coat.
No one's got to... Clue.
Sasha, arguably the poorest Russian team in the history of Russian football, yes?
To be honest, it is a disaster of unimaginable proportions.
Oh, my mind boggles. Russia look absolutely incompetent now in all areas of play. It is absolutely appalling.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.